Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Good to have you with us, everybody. Appreciate you tuning in. It's April 8th. We say that because many of you are downloading this broadcast and going, Mitch, what am I listening to? It's April 8th, broadcast Monday. And I'm broadcasting live from the Oklahoma Mortgage Bankers Annual Conference here at the Skirvin Hilton, downtown Oklahoma City. I'm the keynote speaker tomorrow at the luncheon. Really an honor to be here. Really want to thank you. Thank you to Ken Carter and the board of directors who extended me this invitation. I'm really excited to hear. They got a great lineup of speakers, present company excluded, but I'm looking forward to being here. And then on Wednesday, I'm in Louisville speaking at the Louisville MBA Luncheon. And then next week on April 15th and 16th, I'm speaking in Memphis, Tennessee at the Peabody Hotel to the Tri-State Mortgage Bankers Convention. Three states got together, put on a heck of a conference there. You can learn more by, if you want to get in and get registered for that, call Jamie Dixon at 901-321-6758. Look forward to seeing you there. Make it out to these conferences. It's so important that we get to these conferences with all that's going on. I got to tell you, this conference that Kent and company have lined up here at Oklahoma City is nothing less than just over the top good. It's kind of like, how can you not be at one of these? Anyway, we appreciate you tuning in and being part of the broadcast. Thank you so much for telling others about us and passing the word on. We've got thousands and thousands of listeners, and it is just a real honor to be a part of your method of staying on top on all that's going on. Special thank you goes out to United Guarantee for being a sponsor of a broadcast each and every week. We really appreciate our partnership with them. And I keep saying, if you haven't gone out to the Guarantee website, go ahead and do so. You need to check out some of the things they're doing. And I tell you, it is so important you know who you're partnering with. United Guarantee has come out of this whole fiasco stronger than ever, financially in one of the best positions possible. And I think you'll just benefit from getting to know them. So if you don't haven't called your United Guarantee rep, get them out there. Go to our website, lickitonlending.com, and you can click in the upper right-hand corner. It'll click right through. When you see their ad there, click on that. It'll go right through their website. We appreciate United Guarantee being a part of the broadcast. Call them up, tell them that you appreciate them advertising and being a part of the sponsorship of this broadcast to make it all possible. Joe Farr, good to have you with us, as always.
Hey, Dave.
Boy, I tell you, your world, there's just never a boring day in it, much like.
But today is so far.
Yeah, today's one of those boring days, but.
We need it.
You had a chance, but that's about the time you begin to wonder, can I relax? So what's
that's
going on?
That's right. Today prices are a little lower, only down 3/32. There's been no real news, nothing significant coming from overseas. So it's a quiet day. Dow's down a little bit as well. So nice to see after a week like we had last week.
All right, no kidding. That's the truth. So let's get into last week. Tell us a little bit about, for those that were not around, what
There were three things that kind of combined to make it a great week for mortgage rates. MBS prices, again, these are prices, improved about 125 basis points last week. And, that equates into something around 15 to 20 basis points in improved rate. So it's a very good week. And if you had customers sitting on the fence, it's sure a good time to get them off and get them signed up because it's we've recovered a good bit of what we lost first part of March, and we're back to very, very good levels.
Well, that is encouraging.
Yeah, and last week. it was a little quiet on Monday and Tuesday. The ISM came out on Monday, and it was a little weaker than people expected. But the big movement in prices really started on Wednesday, and then moved a lot on Thursday and Friday. And what happened, Dave, was the big movement started on Thursday with the announcement out of the Bank of Japan where they're going to begin their own quantitative easing program.
Yeah.
And the size of what they've committed to buying of Japanese bonds is when comparing their GDP to our GDP, et cetera, it's like three times the size of what our Fed's quantitative easing program was. And so really, really significant. And what that did to the world markets was said there's a big buyer of long-term fixed-rate assets, and that put increased demand on what's out there. And, of course, prices go up when demand goes up. So we saw a nice improvement in prices for both treasuries and mortgage-backed securities here in the U.S. on that announcement. And then the other big thing, obviously, was the jobs report that came out on Friday. It was somewhat preceded, and I'm surprised that the big miss the way it was not I'm surprised it was considered as big a miss as it was, because there was news coming out early on with the ADP report was weak, and of course that's kind of unreliable, but the jobless claims were up, and the labor component of the ISM services was weak. And so on Friday, when the jobs were announced at 88,000 net new jobs, when 190 was expected, it was a bit of a shock.
Yeah.
Revisions to the previous 2 months were positive. And surprisingly, the unemployment rate came in at a lower amount, given that only 88,000 jobs were expected. That was a bit of a surprise. But then when you dig into it, you learn that it's purely because people left the workforce. So it's a drop in the labor force participation rate, and caused the unemployment rate to come down, but really not for good reason.
Yeah, no kidding. The numbers, and you've got to dig into these numbers, because sometimes they just don't make sense on the surface. So
they can be misleading. And the other thing that happened, and I don't know to what extent it had a big influence on the market, but there's a lot of talk about what's going on in Korea and the threats that seem to be coming out of there every day. So all that kind of pushed people into safer assets, reduced expectation of inflation, and gave the market a better sense that the Fed's not going to begin reducing the quantity of their MBS purchases. So all a very good week for MBS prices.
Well, that is going to be, overall, it was good, but what can we anticipate this week? Pretty light.
You know, there's not a lot coming out. We do have the Treasury auctions. When do they start? I think they're tomorrow, Wednesday, and Thursday, with the 10-year on Wednesday and the 30-year on Thursday. So those could be significant. And then the Fed minutes are to be released on Wednesday. And in the past, those have been kind of benign and not a big market mover. But going back to the minutes that were released the first week of January, those minutes caused a half a point drop in prices. The minutes that came out on the 22nd of February caused a 6 or 8 30-second drop in prices. So they've become market moving. And when the Fed's so highly involved in the market in the sense that they're making about half the market, anything they do or say can be significant to cause mortgage rates to go higher or lower. So be on the lookout for what comes out on Wednesday. And there are a lot of Fed speakers also scheduled to make speeches during the week. So
Fed speak will be going on.
It will be a Fed speak week. The PPI comes out on Friday. Inflation's not been significant. Core PPI is expected to stay contained and well within Fed limits, et cetera. But it, too, can be a significant event. So pay attention to that. Pay attention to the Fed statement, and be aware of the Treasury auctions.
Treasuries, the 3, the 10, and the 30. So big.
Yep.
I mean, there's some market moving data in there that could have an impact on it, but probably the most significant would be what the Feds are talking about. Is that could have some interesting surprises in it. They've been
really
pretty consistent,
can.
Have they been not been in their comments? And so it's not anticipated that we're going to see anything.
Well, the comments, they've issued their statement. It's really when you dig into the minutes and you hear the discourse and you find out the disagreements that go on and the degree to which some members are upset with the policy or advising to take a different approach. And they're talking about cutting back beginning the cutback of their purchases, whereas a couple months ago there was no discussion about cutback. So the message has already moved toward a sooner rather than later start of their reduction in the quantity of the purchases that they're going through. And so the market's highly sensitive to, well, is that going to be this summer? Is that going to be the first part of 2014? So it's just creating a high degree of sensitivity.
Well, we'll be paying attention to it. And again, I tell all our listeners, if you're trying to do this out there by staying on top of it and from blogs and that, it's just not going to work. The markets move too quickly, and MBS Quoteline is just an outstanding service that brings you the most current information as it's happening, almost real time, but it's just really great. And now that it's not, you don't have to digest a lot of information. It's right to the point. Joe, you got a great product, great service.
Well, thank you.
Appreciate you being a part of the broadcast. Folks, stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Economic uncertainty has created a tremendous amount of market volatility for the past few weeks. Intraday price changes seem the rule rather than the exception. Have you been surprised by a midday price change? Have you been frustrated as you locked a loan just ahead of a price movement? Found it difficult to explain to a customer why the rate you quoted is no longer available? MBS Quoteline can eliminate these frustrations. MBS Quoteline monitors Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and Ginny Mae mortgage-backed security prices in real time. It makes the information conveniently available on your desktop, smartphone, or by email or text message. These are the same prices used to set mortgage rates each morning and to issue midday price changes when significant movement occurs. With MBS Quoteline, you'll never be out of touch with the market,
whether you're in the office or on the road.
See for yourself what MBS Quoteline can do for you. Go to MBSQuoteline.com to start a risk-free two-week trial.
MBSQuoteline.com.
646-716-4972. The Lincoln on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lincoln.
Good to have you back with us. Appreciate you tuning in. By the way, I didn't tell you at the beginning of our broadcast what today's broadcast is really focused on. We're talking about mergers and acquisitions, commonly referred to as M&A, and we've got Chuck Klein, recognized as one of the industry experts on this topic. He's been doing it for over 20 years. He's an old man, been at it for a long time. He's also my business partner, so he's muted and can't get a shot back. He'll get his shot when he gets into the Hot Topic segment. But it is really fun to have him on, and folks, there's so much going on in the area of M&A, and I'm excited to have Chuck back on and talking about that. If you're considering it or if you're hearing about it, tune in and stay tuned all the way through the broadcast. We're also going to have Paul Mallow. I see he's just joined us in on there, and we're going to have Gabe Minton a little bit. But we normally have Alice Alvey right here live with us, but Alice has had to take care of some personal business and cannot join us live, but she pre-recorded some comments. Folks, listen to some of the things she's saying here. That's really significant, some great information. As my daughter would say, it's a great 411 announcement here or segment, so stay tuned. Here's Alice.
Good morning, everyone. This is Alice Alvey. I'm sorry I can't be live there today with you on the show. Dave, I'll certainly miss you, but I wanted to make sure I was able to give everyone the most recent updated news in the legislative world today. And first and foremost is the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau's launch of their database of consumer complaints. Now, we talked about this last July when they actually issued their first report about the complaints that they received. And at that time, they had over 45,000 complaints. Now we have access to the entire database through their website. I actually was out there playing with it a little bit, and you can do a lot of searching, and yes, you can search your company name to see if you are on the list. You can also search by the type of complaints, and if you want to download the whole thing and all 90,000 of the complaints they have today, you can do that. Now, so that's a jump of doubling of the complaints in this most recent 7-month period. Clearly, customers are finding out more about this. The other thing I noticed is when you look at the report for the mortgage complaints, it's like a roller coaster ride. It looks just like interest rate charts on some weeks, but it really is a spike somewhere around the first of the month, and they could get over 250 complaints on a given day on the beginning of the month, and then it'll drop down to less than 50 complaints on other days during the month. So it really is this roller coaster look I don't know if it has anything to do with servicing timing and people trying to get their payments in on time and getting charged late fees, but that'll be another layer of assessment I'm sure somebody will have to dive into. Yes, a lion's share of the complaints are about servicing and, of course, about the big mega lenders that are out there just simply because they have the most loans, right? So they're going to have the most complaints out there. All in all, it's really interesting to see that there's about 43,000 of those complaints out of the 90 that are really associated in some way with the servicing side. People have got to know about this on your teams. So managers out there, make sure you are talking about the impact that this website has, where the average consumer can now just go file a complaint. And now not only is it that CFPB knows about it, but it's all of the mortgage industry can go look up and say, hey, how many complaints is XYZ Bank having? Or what about this servicer? You know, are they getting a lot of complaints filed against them? Because obviously it's customer service issues. Now, once again, the good news is for those of you on the application origination side, that's only about 3,600 of those 90,000 complaints. So far we are flying under the radar, and that's the good news. So go ahead, check it out, see if your company is on the list, and make sure you've talked to your staff in detail. This is new information about how consumers now have a straight line to a federal agency to complain about your company, and now there's even more data out there with your name in lights. All right, let's talk about a couple of bills, too, that are also pending. I want to make sure that everyone is watching the FHA DE pre-endorsement review process change that's being proposed by FHA. So this is a proposed rule. The comment period is open for another 2 weeks or so. So April 22nd is your drop dead date to get in there and comment. I understand that many of you are past the FHA test case phase. So what this means is FHA is looking at, they would no longer require that test case phase prior to closing for new companies entering the market. Those of you who went through that process, you've got to get out there and comment on how valuable that is, how it makes a different barrier to entry, and FHA has got to stop this constant trying to compare themselves to Fannie and Freddie. They're an insurance company. So these processes are different for them. The fact that you can get approved Fannie Freddie and not have to have your loans looked at in underwriting until post-closing, that's a different ballgame. It's a different situation. With FHAs, I've got to know up front about the insuring aspect of it that is a unique paperwork process lenders need to make sure they understand. It's not just about underwriting quality. It's just as much about paperwork process, and they've got the forms right to make sure a claim is going to get paid. So double dynamic FHA needs to be watchful of out there before they eliminate this process. Those of you who've been through it or are concerned about it from a competitive advantage standpoint, please go out, get your comments posted. It's easy enough to just Google that nowadays. You can even post from the Consumer Financial website, which you need to go out and check out anyway. Also, we're watching House Bill 1077, the Consumer Mortgage Choice Act. This is the one that's great news. The bill proposes to eliminate including loan level pricing adjustments and loan officer compensation in that infamous 3-point test in the qualified mortgage rule. We don't have any information on any of this yet. Congress is just back today, April 8th, so we'll have more to report on for you next week. But definitely, we've got a window here where we're still waiting to hear from CFPB about how this points and fees test is going to work. We're not going to get that for probably at least another 30 days. So those of you trying to set up your policies and procedures for all the pending rules, focus on something else, because QM, we don't really have enough on to set final policies yet to really know how many of our loans are going to fall in that green zone, right? I keep talking about green zone, yellow zone, and red zone when it comes to truly understanding qualified mortgages. We'll certainly have shows about that in the future once we get some definitive information on that points and fees test. So once again, that's House Bill 1077 that's going to give us some more potential push to be able to say, let's have a common sense points and fees test. We're also watching House Bill 1145. This is the FHA Fiscal Solvency Act. We're all watching very closely to make sure FHA can keep sustaining itself. As long as the market keeps hanging in there, we think FHA is going to be okay for a little bit. So that's my report for today, Dave. Thanks again, and have a great show.
I wish you were here, Alice. Always good to have you here. Folks, how can you live without this information? It's so concise, right to the point, so valuable. I was thinking about it. You know, I listen to Alice when I'm on the treadmill, and that really helps. You know, kind of sometimes I think she takes my heart rate up as I listen to all that's going on. But anyway, folks, stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break. Sometimes that thing just takes forever to get started here. That's a computer, and it's latency when we deal with this. So anyway, I think that ad will be starting here. We got Paul Malo coming up right after this ad break, assuming this ad break happens. And we'll see here. We're going to be talking a little bit about the M&A world. That's happening. Very excited about that. And so very much very excited about that. Well, that ad is not working. The joys of traveling. We do this normally from my office. We got great connectivity, but for some reason, something's not working with it today on that. So let's jump over and connect with our good friend and recent addition to the broadcast, Paul Malo. Paul, hopefully I'll get your mic turned on here. It's we've got a few issues going on with the switchboard here. How about that? So just love it when things work and when they don't. It's just not fun. So I'm trying to figure out what we're doing here. Paul, hang on. And I'm going to turn Gabe Minton. We've got you coming up here in just a minute. So I'm going to try to turn on your mic as well so we can at least deal with some of this. Lots of things going on in the industry, folks, and we are excited about what we have, and we'll see what's going on. So let's see what we can get working here. Love technology. When you do everything over the Internet, you just have to expect. You know, Andy Schell is traveling this week. He's out doing house calls, and it's one of those things where we miss having Andy on the broadcast, being a part of it on a regular basis. But you know what? There's the technology issues can be so much fun. So we're going back in, trying to reconnect with the studio, see if we can't make this thing work the way we need it to. And, I know what happened. It seems to be that we lost our Internet connection. That always will mess things up. All right. So got the technical difficulties we're working with there. So, folks, stay tuned. We're just in the process of working it and connecting with everything again. Love it when everything works, and when it doesn't, such a challenge. So hopefully we'll have this all here just a minute. I'm reconnecting to the hotel network as I lost what we had before. So I'm appears we're nearly there. So Paul, you're still there. Don't go away. I've just about got us back. And we are, there we are, we're back and in, and Paul Malo, it's running, it looks like it's running. There, Paul Malo, you are with us still?
I hope so. Can you hear me?
I do now. Man, okay, what a lot of fun scrambling to make it all happen here, Paul. Thank you so much. Felt like amateur hour there for a little bit, but this is the show where I host it and I run it. So anyway, Paul, what you got for us today? What's going on in the news? You seem to be having your finger on the pulse of everything.
Well, we try it, imfnews.com. Basically,
yes, by the way, let's talk about that. IMF News, that is a new blog that you've started that you joined up with Industry Mortgage Finance, and it's a great blog. A lot of people should subscribe to it. How can they get to it, Paul?
Well, it's imfnews.com. It's the daily from Inside Mortgage Finance, which has been around for 32 years, you know, bringing data and news to the industry. So now we're daily. We're out there bringing exclusive information and data to the industry. Our scoop today is that B of A is out in the market with yet another mega servicing package, $16 billion of mortgage servicing rights. These are tied to Freddie Mac loans. Some of it's HAR product. The delinquencies are about 6.8%, and the foreclosures are 3.1%. The bid day, we're told, is today. The entire story, again, is on our website at imfnews.com. You can read the full story. You know, we reported last week or the week before I went on vacation, that, you know, the servicing market is heating up. We're seeing more flow and bulk deals out there, and the prices are really firming up, as Chuck might tell you later on in the broadcast. But, you know, so it looks like the servicing business is starting to come back really strong. There's a lot of hedge funds out there that are still eyeing it. One is tied to Phoenix Capital, a guy named Michael Lau, who was running their M&A business for quite some time, including the B of A auctions. He apparently has teamed up with a hedge fund tied up with Prospect Mortgage, and they're out there looking to buy some packages. So there's that going on, and I think, as you mentioned earlier, your partner Chuck's been involved in a couple of M&A deals, which I've been bugging him to tell me about, but he can't get clearance from the darn client to write a press release or at least talk to me, which is strange, because in this day and age where everything is public and you got CFPB and you got state and federal regulators, you might as well get out there in the open with it, because it's going to get out there anyway, even
it's
if you're a private firm.
I know you're having fun just chiding Chuck while he's on hold here, but yeah.
Oh, it's not
the
Chuck,
podcast
he's a great
you
guy.
You can ask him right on. I'll have him on here shortly.
It's his client. Free Chuck Klein. Let's start a campaign.
Free Chuck Klein.
He would love to talk about it. I understand that's how some clients are. My point is, like I said, in this day and age of disclosure, of having everything out there in the open, that you might as well just put out some kind of statement about your deal, because it's going to get out there, and you might as well control the spin before someone else controls it for you. So,
yeah,
the other big thing before I sign off is the president's budget is coming out in the middle of the week, and in there we hope we're going to learn about the condition of the FHA mutual mortgage insurance fund, the MMI.
Yeah.
And we got a little blurb on our website today about it. There's some speculation that they might need to draw from the Treasury, but not necessarily for the forward program, maybe the reverse program.
Oh, interesting. So
yeah, we don't know that. It's all speculation.
All speculation
at this point. Yeah, but something's cooking, and you know, either FHA will get a clean bill of health, somewhat clean bill of health, or by that I mean no taxpayer money, or maybe the reverse program will continue to cause problems there.
Yeah.
But as we know, they've tightened up controls and regulations on all the programs coming out of FHA. So, you know, people believe that in time FHA will be okay. And, you know, I was out last week, but the big news last week, of course, was the stellar earnings posted by Fannie Mae.
I know.
I mean, that was just phenomenal.
Huge numbers.
Yeah.
So the thought of the Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac going away out of the federal government anytime soon when they're looking at budget constraints, you look at that kind of earnings, you go, That's a compelling argument. We're going to be having them around for a long time and a part of the federal government for a long time. So, well, I appreciate it. So many people can stay up on things that's happening. You are well known. Well, I mean, you pick up the phone and can call guys like Chuck Klein and they answer the call. And to stay on top of it is what's going on is so critical. So I give your website of the blog
sure.
where people can sign up one more time.
IMFnews.com. IMFnews.com. And, you know, everything we know is there.
It is there, and you're on top of it like few people I know. Paul, thanks so much for taking time out of your busy day. Great guy and company there.
Great, thank you.
Over there at Industry Mortgage Finance. Appreciate you being part of it. Folks, tune in to connect to www.imfnews.com. That's it. Good. Paul, thank you so much. Have a great day, everybody. We'll be right back. Well, I'm looking at the clock. We need to move on. I'm going to get Gabe Minton on right now, turning on his mic. Hey, the technologies are back and working. It's amazing what happens to when you have a website. Anyway, Gabe, there's a good to have you on the broadcast again. Are you there?
Yeah. Hi, David. How are you?
Well, you're Mr. Technology. If you could see me scrambling a little bit ago as I'm looking at my Verizon MiFi device, which I'm connected to the network with, normally never fails. But you know what? There's this thing called a plug-in into the wall. You got to make sure it's plugged in. I thought it was, and the battery went dead. So anyway, Gabe, you've been working with MISBO, and there's some pretty significant developments, and I want our radio listeners to be the first to hear about it.
Awesome. So first of all, thank you very much for having me on the broadcast today. It's great to be here. What I wanted to specifically talk to you guys about was the Uniform Document Identifier Initiative. And
that's a mouthful.
Uniform Document Identifier.
Okay.
In a nutshell, I understand we're on limited time today, and I'll give you a website and everything, so if you want to learn more about this at the end. But what this does essentially is give a thumbprint to each instance of specific critical mortgage documents. So we've looked at the HUD, we've looked at mortgages and deeds, we've looked at the GFE, we've looked at the promissory note, a standard 30-year Fannie Freddie promissory note. And that's basically what we started with, and we're creating a standard by which you can literally stamp a thumbprint in the margin of the document and then be able to identify it over its whole lifetime, over 30 years.
A digital thumbprint. That's interesting.
A digital thumbprint. And this digital thumbprint doesn't care about what technology you're using. It doesn't matter what the format is. It doesn't matter if it's a smart document, e-mortgage, or a PDF, or a TIFF, which is a fax document, or a paper document. We designed it in such a way that the thumbprint would render and be able to be generated no matter the format of the document so that it would be backwards compatible.
Well,
when you have these thumbprints and they're all in circulation in the industry, if the standard is adopted, then there is unbelievable amounts of products and services that you could create. Just start to think of the possibilities of uniform web services calling from any trading partner to any other trading partner asking if they have a specific document or can they validate something on a specific document, and you can do this all lights out without any person calling somebody and saying,
wow,
do you have this loan, you know, with this address and this borrower's last name, which is traditionally more how it's happening today. And that's what the intent of the design behind this is.
That could be revolutionary. It's been the way we're trading our paper and a lot of the issues that we've suffered from recently.
That's the intent. And right now we're pretty far along. We've been probably 8 months to a year in development, and we have tested on 110,000 separate instances of the HUD, we have tested the thumbprint and it works, you know, meaning that it's unique and it uniquely identifies each of the 110,000 HUDs we tested it against. And so we're rendering that into a white paper for MISMO, and you can go to MISMO.org and look for the new development work group called Universal Document Identifier if you want to get involved, or download copies of the proposed standard. And that should be done in the June timeframe, which is what I was talking
about. The new standard
will
be by June?
Yes, and there'll be a panel that will be discussed at the upcoming MBA Technology Conference next week in Florida as well.
Good. Outstanding. Significant stuff. Gabe, this is amazing. And for those that don't know you, you're a regular on the broadcast. I mean, I've had you on here regularly, so most people know you. But, again, you're with SilverSling. Can you give them a little insights on your background real quickly?
Sure. Yeah, most people know me as having worked with the MBA and MISMO, which is an organization that I helped to create and ran for a number of years in its earlier life. And I now currently work at ServiceLink. And one of the first mortgage jobs that I had when I was younger was working with you, Dave, the online trading firm we worked at.
Yeah, we were on the bleeding edge back in those days. Gabe, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to be with us and giving us important development. Keep us posted. I can't wait to get that website they can go to again so they can look this up again. Is one more time?
It's www.mismo.org, and then you're specifically looking for the new development work group called Universal Document Identifier. And it's worth pointing out, just so your listeners know, there are early discussions going on universal loan identifiers and universal property identifiers as well. You can sign up and get involved in those work groups on the MISMO.org website also.
Things, they are a-changing. Technology marches on. Gabe, thanks so much for taking over time out of your busy day to be here with us. Folks, we'll be right back after this brief break.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging, or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan,
if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success,
Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300
combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services, or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Quick word about the accounting seminar webinar that's coming up that Andy Schell is going. He's not on the broadcast. He's out traveling, actually in the air as we speak right now. Yeah, but the accounting MBA, campus MBA webinar on accounting. Dial up, go to their website, look it up, get a part of it. It's really, really important. I am excited, and it's taken a bit of coaching to get this guy on the radio. Chuck kind of is one of these guys. You know, M&A guys operate kind of out there. Paul was on earlier talking about, you know, you can't get these M&A guys to open up. Dave, what's going to take? But we have got Chuck Klein on the broadcast, and it's really good to have you, Chuck, here. I just want to make sure you can hear us and that we've got you dialed in, given our earlier technology issues.
Yeah, well, I'm here, Dave. Thanks so much for having me. It's what an honor and a treat to be part of your group today.
Well, it's good. And you heard Paul giving you a bad time. You're good friends with Paul Mullo, and he certainly wants to know all the latest going on. Of course, that sounds like a reporter anyway. But, you know, you want to take a shot back. He's already back. He'll listen to this later. But you can take a shot back at him if you want.
You never take a shot back at a reporter, Dave.
Yeah, that's a dangerous thing. You never shoot back. You know, they can take all the shots in the world, but the get even part is just, you know, it shows up in the press. So anyway, Paul's a good friend, and we sure appreciate it. And there's certainly a lot going on in the world of M&A. And Joe and I are going to be talking to you about that over the next 20 minutes. And I really want to get into it. But let's talk about it. Are we in a buyer's market or a seller's market for the mortgage bankers today? How would you characterize it? Buyer or seller? Both?
Oh, I think we're definitely in a seller's market. The mortgage companies are, the profit margins we've seen over the last year and really last 16 months or so exceed probably anything we've seen in 20 years. And so mortgage companies are doing very well. And along with success, you have outside entities looking to participate and want to be part of that success. You know, Dave, we look back and, you know, back in 2007 and 2008, you couldn't give a mortgage company away.
Right.
Nobody wanted to be in the business.
They were toxic, yeah.
But toxic is the right word. And today the litter is definitely back on mortgage companies. And the returns are good. The industry has done a wonderful job of cleaning itself up. And, you know, the regulatory bodies have helped as well, and it's been a painful process, continues to be a painful process, but the overall result is I think we're seeing a much better run business today. The shady customers and characters have seemed to have gone away. But overall, as I say, we've seen mortgage companies doing very, very well. And you know, we kind of go to economics 101, that it's purely supply and demand, that you have a lot more investors looking to get into the mortgage business, the mortgage companies looking to sell. And so I think you categorize it as an absolute seller's market.
Well, let's talk about some of the investors that are getting in there. Who are the investors showing an interest in acquiring mortgage companies these days, Chuck?
You know, Dave, it's in the past, as you know, our primary investor would have been a bank. And banks and mortgage companies have always been a good match for each other. Joe Farr, my friend who's on as well, can certainly attest to that with Joe's background and the banking side, and we assisted Joe for many years doing that, and mortgage companies as well. But kind of the difference we've seen is here lately, within the last years, you have hedge funds, private equity firms, security firms are all taking a look at it as well because of the returns. And you know, some of these hedge funds and PE firms actually own mortgage companies. You know, Paul mentioned earlier Michael Lau and the initiative he's heading up. And so he's got a very large hedge firm behind him as well. So they're looking at the mortgage business. They see the real returns here. It could be a huge opportunity for them. So some outside investors who haven't been there in the past are now there. Some of these have mortgage companies. Some of these have large portfolios of loans they want to refinance. They're taking subprime loans, turning them into prime loans, real estate values pick up, credit gets cleaned up, and so they're able to put quality borrowers once again into agency type products, and so they need an outlet for them. But the investors here are new, some are new and some are old, but the interesting thing is we have large funds of capital looking to make an entrance.
That's interesting. Joe, you've had some dealings with Chuck in this.
Yeah.
So you've got firsthand knowledge of all this.
Chuck, and it was always great, and he helped us find the right fit, and I think we'll talk about that in a little bit, that it's a whole lot more about the fit of the people than it is the anything else. But, you know, Chuck, you mentioned big margins and the margins you can earn. Well, you can only earn margins if you buy right. So how are the buyers valuing mortgage companies right now?
Great question, Joe. Great question. You know, value is derived basically from three sources. You have your book value, you have what we call franchise value, and we have a multiple of earnings. And the franchise value is really a tough one to get your hands around. You know, what is franchise value? And that's a hard one to describe. It's like one of these things that I'm not really sure it is, but I know when I see it. And franchise value can be the agency approvals. It can be length of time in a market. There's real name identification to that. And so that's carrying some weight in this. But historically, you know, as you know, mortgage companies would trade for the book value plus some multiple of earnings. In the past several years, you know, if you got your book value and some type of earnout, that was about as good as you could expect. But today, because the profit margins are so good, these mortgage companies are saying, you know, I'm just not going to sell my company for its book value. I'll hold this thing, and I'm not going to sell it for 1 year's earnings at the closing table either, because if I can hold on to it, I'll make that. And the competitive nature of these mortgage businesses has changed so dramatically versus what it was back in 2006 and 2007, that they don't have the competition per loan they once had, which has absolutely increased those profit margins and expanded their market. So the companies there said, you know, if I can't get my book value plus a couple of times earnings at closing and some percentage of future earnings, well, then I'm really not interested. So to answer your question, the book value plus a multiple of 2 to 3 times earnings is pretty much where values are today, Joe.
And then you just mentioned in some percentage of going forward, is that on top of the 2 times earnings, 2 to 3 times earnings?
Well, yes, that's correct. It depends on how much you get at closing. And, you know, we've seen some deals that are close to 3 times earnings at the closing table. The interesting thing we're seeing here is that historically, you know, mortgage companies have always said, well, don't value me based on my past earnings. Value me based on what I'm going to earn next year. And as you and I know, that's the hardest thing to imagine.
That is hard.
Well, I see what you did last year, but how do I know you're going to do something in the future? And if you look at what's happened last year, these profit margins some of these guys made were just, you know, off the charts. They were so high. And that is wonderful. These mortgage companies have done very well. They're seeing margins never experienced in some cases. And in other cases, they're far exceed what they've made, you know, over the last 20 years. So with the margins increasing, you know, they're saying, okay, well, let's base it, you know, not on future earnings, but I'll take the trailing earnings. And that's mm-hmm. a new twist here. Kind of hard to argue that, well, you won't make as much money as you did last year. Now, there's a lot of things that go into that, as we all know, the price of securities and the investors, the major conduits, the Wells, the Chases, who are, you know, they're definitely a part of the marketplace, but they're not the entire market. Most of these mortgage companies, but every mortgage company we talk to is either applying for the agency approvals, Fannie, Freddie, and Jenny, or they already have those. So they're starting to retain servicing as well, which is giving them an ability to increase their margins. Once again, we go back to profit margins
right
here. So back to answering your question, that we've seen companies trade at 2 times their trailing earnings and then some type of earnout for the future. Now, once again, what gets thrown into that is, you know, do you sell 100% of your company or do you retain some earnings as well? If you have a retention, retain some stock. If you have a retention of stock or ownership, then that has an effect on future earnings. So you're playing, you know, you're in the game as well. Your skin is in this game, and so you have an incentive to produce, but also you get to participate in those future earnings.
Because we all know that, you know, when you buy a company and the people you buy choose to not work for you, you hadn't bought a whole lot.
You bought a bunch of furniture.
Yeah. So that brings me back to the question I mentioned earlier, and I know how you feel about this, but let's talk about the single most important factor when you're putting buyers and sellers together.
Well, you know, you can say a lot of different things, but let me tell you what I think is most important, Joe, is the culture, that you have to be able to match cultures in the company. And, you know, we call it philosophical compatibility. And, you know, a business partnership is like a marriage. You know, you better respect each other and like each other a lot. And it's not all about the beauty of the bride or the size of the diamonds you're going to get. If you can't get along and work closely together and appreciate each other, there's probably not going to be a very happy marriage. And we all know what happens as a result of that. So, Joe, you know, I think what really our challenge in transactions, trying to put the right cultures together. You know, we can bring a lot of guys to the table. You know, you can have a lot of suitors, but the cultures don't match up. It's exactly as you described. The people leave, and this is a people business, and especially the top management people. And one thing you've always got to be careful about as a buyer is you don't want to go in and try and change that culture. You know, there's something about that company that made it successful. And so that's what you want to use is those success factors. And you want to encourage that company to grow and grow along those same channels. So you want to encourage that growth rather than try and stifle it. And changing cultures it can be very, very hazardous. And so our job is try and match like cultures.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I tell you, culture is such a key component, Chuck. And I think that's where the value. A lot of people say, well, I'm going to go find a buyer. But it's really that third party that the consulting. It's almost it's more of a marriage counselor. I mean, you're as much marriage counselor as you are a consultant in the process. But I want to move over to talking about production channels, because I think there is a real dividing between, you know, not all companies are the same. They're not all equal values. And so which production channels have more franchise value than others?
Well, historically, retail has had a much higher value, and I still believe that's the case today. But I think retail, because it is bricks and mortar, is primarily retail, once again, is going to focus on purchase money transactions, which is where most companies want to be. We'll all take advantage of refis, but we want our core business to be purchase money. And when you have a retail business, you can kind of direct your loan officers in that vein. So retail is, you know, it does have, you know, in my opinion, you know, higher value. Now, how much, you know, can you put on that? I think once again, go to multiples of earnings. Do you get 2.5 times? Do you get 2.75 or 3 times? But, you know, we've also seen some desire to begin to correspond in the wholesale channels. And one reason
wholesale seems to be making a comeback, yeah.
It is. The profit margins have opened up because you had the major conduits, once again, the Chases and those guys got out of that business. And actually, we don't want to work with the brokers anymore. And so, you know, there's a lot of good mortgage companies who broker loans as well, but they don't have the warehouse capacity sometimes. Sometimes they don't feel comfortable with doing it. So there's a lot of advantage to being in that wholesale channel. And I think the profit margins increased dramatically, Dave. You know, we look back at that 07 era and looking back at profit margins, you know, a lot of guys are making 25 basis points, and, hey, that's not bad. Well, these wholesale guys, we saw shops making 10, 12, 15 basis points profit margins because of the competition for it. And like, you know, I'm always shaking my head, well, why would you want to be in that business, that high risk, that only make 10 basis points? Well, we're seeing these wholesale guys sometimes are far exceeding retail channels. And you and I both know the companies who are over there. We saw one guy that's close to 3 points. And he just priced his product higher. And the brokers are and people selling to him are saying, well, hey, you're my only channel of business. And the other thing is service. That some of these large wholesalers, their service is so poor they can't get loans closed, underwritten closing time. So a good efficient wholesaler who can turn loans around in 48 hours can capture a lot of business and still charge a higher price. So, you know, the non-traditional firms, the PE firms, the hedge funds, you know, they have a good core business in some cases we talked about. They have a large, you know, quantity of loans. They've got servicing plants. And so they want to be able to defend what they've got. So they want to use, you know, call centers and also the wholesale retail channels. So those, to answer your question in a long way around about way of doing it, is those are gaining value as well, Dave.
So those that have that consumer direct ability to be able to get on there and have the call centers are representing a real extra value to those that are trying to retain servicing or, you know, hold on to what they have?
You know what, I think, Dave, I think you need to do a little bit of everything. That you can't serve 100 different masters, but
yep.
I think you can have parts of your production and everything. And, you know, we're seeing some companies, and a couple of guys that come to us and said, we really think there's some opportunities in the consumer direct and the internet models, what have you. And we think we can get them at probably a lower price than retail. Well, we like them because we pay less commissions to loan officers, and our profit margins can be pretty good there. Now, you know, what the success rate is, we know, on some of that internet lending is pretty tough. But I've seen some good companies here in the last 2 years that have done very, very well at it.
Joe?
Yep. Hey, Chuck, there. We've talked about two basic kinds of mortgage bankers out there right now. And one is that kind of firm that does not yet retain servicing, sells all its business to correspondents, wholesalers, not wholesalers. And then the other are those who have the ability to retain servicing. So which of the two types represent a more attractive target right now?
Well, I think, you know, the more attractive target is someone who is retaining servicing. And the bigger piece there is that Fannie, Freddie, and most importantly, Ginnie Mae approval. And if we look back, you know, people just didn't retain servicing for, gosh, how many years, Joe? You couldn't afford to retain it. That you had to plow so much of that SRP back in your price just to get the deal in the door. That there's no way that you can retain it, and you just eat your cash up. And for the first time in, gosh, 20 years, we're seeing mortgage companies retain again and retain it profitably. And we've got several customers who are just knocking the cover off the ball and retaining 100% of their servicing, and especially on the Ginnie Mae side. And, you know, if you look at the pricing of the major conduits versus what the Ginnie Mae securities are trading at, Joe, and you see it every single day, that, man, there's some real opportunities retaining servicing on the profit side. And so I believe because, you know, you have the ability to access the agencies directly, you're not at the mercy of the major conduits, then, you know, it provides a lot of abilities. You can retain it. You can sell it if you need to at different times. But what is just as important is the understated value of that servicing asset, Joe. I think it's critical right now.
And do you see fair prices being paid? I mean, right now, if you're only having to book maybe two times – servicing, that's what you give up if you sell it as production, maybe three times. So as you sell it as a servicing portfolio as part of a company, are you getting fair values for those?
Well, you're not. And let's define fair value. If relative to where portfolios are trading, and I think we mentioned that earlier, that there's, I think Paul Mollow mentioned, Dave, I'm right, that
yep.
You know, he's seeing some portfolios trading right now. And those values are firming up. And, you know, I remember sitting at a conference, a TMBA conference, Jill, and you were there. One of our consultants, his name was mentioned earlier, he's a great guy, trades a lot of servicing. His comment was, he said, I would rather try and sell subprime loans than sell servicing right now because their third party, the counterparty risk was so great that there was no value to it. Well, that's changed. I think there's more value firming up in that area. But I think the relative to where portfolios are trading, yes, absolutely, Joe, you're seeing the value of the servicing on the books. You're getting fair market for it. Now, there's a difference in fair market and economic, as we all know. That economic value is what it's worth to you over a period of time. And so the economics of this stuff, these low-coupon loans, as we know, are just – they're going to be around a while. The quality of the loans themselves just bode for retention and to put product on. So I think that if you could pay, let's say, two times multiple for servicing – that is a steal, especially if you can retain that servicing. It lives out to be 8 or 9 years old. Man, you have just knocked the cover off the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the bigger firms are seeing that, and they're seeing these opportunities and recognize it and jumping all over it.
Absolutely.
So you've been through this experience. So I want to talk. We've got just a few minutes left. We've got to wrap this up. But you've been through this experience, and you've been through it with Chuck. Chuck actually worked with you on it. Was it that painful, Joe? I mean, and then Chuck, comment on that. I mean, you don't have to get into that specific of the transaction, but is this something someone should just avoid because of the hassle factor? Or, Joe, what's your take on it?
Well, I think it's an enjoyable event when the people fit well. I mean, we had acquisitions where it was a perfect match, where the sellers wanted to be part of what we had to offer, and we wanted their their markets. Then we had others that weren't such a good fit, and it makes the whole transaction so much more enjoyable if you go into it with the two sides being in agreement that it's a good match.
So that goes to test point is the culture.
Absolutely, and the culture, people recognize that you bring things to the table that will help them be better. You're not going to make them change in order to be like you. You're going to help them to do what they do and do what they did well, and hopefully bring something to the table that makes them better.
So Chuck did all right as a marriage counselor?
Yes, he did.
Chuck, let's talk about geographical areas a bit. I want to get an idea. Some areas more desirable than other areas, geographical parts of the country?
Well, you know, typically, Dave, it's wherever property values have firmed up. And Texas is hot as a pistol right now. I mean, not quite hot temperature-wise yet, but it's getting there. But
it's getting there.
The real estate market. Somebody told me the top 9 real estate markets in the U.S., Texas had 6 of them. So
wow.
Texas is very desirable. People want to be here. They see good property values. They see, you know, a lot of reasons that the growing economy is very important. But, you know, I see probably what is probably easier to find is area people don't want. Florida still is having some problems, and there's still some time for property values to firm up. California, even though it's coming back, some guys just don't like California because it's such a different market to be out there. So we hear some talk about that. Some of the areas, you know, the in Michigan as well, the Detroit area is still trouble. But, yeah, primarily, you know, the good – any place there's property values are stabilized or increasing, you know, there's no objection to being in those markets.
Let's talk about the states, Joe.
Well, do most of your deals get done in Texas, Chuck?
Well, they do, Joe, but, you know, we are domiciled in Texas, so I've been in this market since, I hate to say it, but 1973. I guess I shouldn't hate to say it. I'm glad I'm still here. So we know a lot. We know a lot of the players, and so that helps as well to, you know, we support them on the consulting side, on the sales side, and selling assets, so they know us pretty well. But, you know, Joe, we work for Sodogamy Warehouse Lender. We work for just about every single warehouse lender. And we meet a lot of mortgage companies. They hire us to go in and do an operational review of the mortgage company. So we meet, sometimes 15 companies a month we'll review. And, you know, a slower month might be 6 companies we'll look at. So we're meeting lots of new companies all the time. And, you know, right now I'd say we're working on 3 different transactions, Joe. And none of them are in Texas. So that's interesting.
Hmm.
Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, holdbacks are something that, as you mentioned, were a real trouble in 2007 and 2008. Are you seeing acquiring companies assume prior production reps and warranties, or how's that being handled now, Chuck?
Well, that's a tough one, Joe. That legacy issues is the hardest thing we have to contend with. You know, if you do an asset sale, those go away usually. Now, that could be some instances where they still follow you around. But if you're going to do a stock sale, and most of the deals we're doing today are stock sales because these investors want the Fannie, Freddie, and Ginnie approval to come to a stock sale.
Right, right.
If you're doing that, then you've got to deal with repurchase issues. Now, there are a couple things we've worked through recently is universal global settlements on repurchases with the conduits as well as working with Fannie Mae. And so those are getting some teeth, and, you know, we're able to. But they haven't been the issue they had in the past, but they're still there. We have to deal with them every day.
Real quickly, I'm looking at where – just real quick response to that. What can you share with our listeners about the buyers and sellers and have experience after the transaction? I mean, what is the after-transaction experience?
You know, Dave, probably the thing we see is the transition that, you know, no matter how you chart it up, it doesn't quite go like you thought it would. Now, sometimes it's better, sometimes not as good. But, you know, it's somebody told me a while back, if you plan on doing something, you sell a mortgage company, and the transition is days, it'll take you 120 days. But, you know, it's just a matter of getting all the systems to talk to each other. And,
yeah,
you know, the budgets never seem to be exactly what you thought they were going to be. And sometimes they're much better. But it takes a little bit longer than most people think when they're putting the two companies together, because you're merging cultures, you're merging people, you're consolidating functions. So if there's issues, it's always a little bit rougher than we thought it was to begin with.
Well, the drums are signaling we're done. We're over. Thank you, Chuck, so much for taking time to get a hold of it. What's the best way for people to reach you?
Best way is for our website at www.mbf-team.com, or my direct line is 512-501-2813.
Perfect, Chuck. Thank you so much for taking time out of a very busy day. 3 transactions pending. You're one busy guy. Take time out for this. I really want to say thank you. Folks, next week we're getting into loan servicing, starting a series on loan servicing. Pretty significant given the fact that B of A's putting all that out on the market. So good timing, folks. Good to be with you. Have a great week, everybody.
This has been Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.